From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1860 when anthropologist Lewis Henry Morgan founded the Rochester Historical Society. The organization houses and curates more than 200,000 items related to Rochester's history. Items like a skirt worn by Susan B. Anthony, a table used for demonstrations by the Fox sisters, papers of the city's founder, Nathaniel Rochester. But over the years, the Rochester Historical Society, or RHS, has faced financial challenges. It went through a series of moves to smaller and smaller spaces, often struggling to pay rent, and in early December, canceled some programs, furloughed a couple of staff members, reduced the hours. And now, unless the RHS receives a significant boost, a donated space, or an offer to collaborate or merge with perhaps another organization, the hundreds of thousands of items that tell the story of Rochester and our history could be lost, and lost is sort of an interesting word there. I mean, we're not going to put them in the garbage, but where do they go? What happens to Susan B. Anthony's clothing or a lock of Frederick Douglass's hair? What about hundreds of paintings and other pieces of artwork depicting Rochester history? Our guests this hour are with the Rochester Historical Society, and they're going to join us to help us understand what the organization's future might be, depending on sort of various possibilities and the current challenges, as well as understanding our history and why this matters. Carolyn Vaca is president of the board for the Rochester Historical Society, Monroe County historian, and chair of the Department of History at St. John Fisher College. Welcome. Nice to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for giving us this opportunity.
You got it. Well, it's right in the wheelhouse for our listeners. I mean, this it matters, and I'm not saying that as sort of an advocate or a booster, but our history matters. Tom Latta is a vice president of leasing for Buckingham Properties, so knows a lot about the buildings around town. Maybe he's going to turn up a site or two. I don't know. But he's also a board member for the Rochester Historical Society. Thank you for taking the time. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And also board member Rich Calabrese. Richard is a board member for the Rochester Historical Society as well. Thank you for taking the time to be here.
My pleasure.
Well, Carolyn, this is not a story that is necessarily new to you and the board. You've been aware of the challenges for a while, but for a lot of listeners, it's new. So just how acute are we talking about of a situation for the Historical Society?
At the time that we decided to suspend operations, we were looking at about having 8 months left in our operating funds budget. And in order to do the diligence that we need to do, we decided that we had to focus all of our resources on planning for the collections and being very aggressive, number one, in looking at the size of the collection. The collection is now in over 8,000 square feet of space, and that's untenable.
Okay, so now that it's been reported in various places, what has the response been? What have you been hearing?
We've had many positive comments, offers of some volunteer help. We've had some small donations. There's been a significant uptick in that. People saying, you know, I can't give much, but this is what I can do, and I'm happy to do it. But in terms of that big, wonderful gift or whatever solution, that has not yet emerged.
Are you still hopeful that it can?
I am hopeful that one way or another, we will find a way to keep the bulk of this collection in Rochester. There are a variety of solutions that we may have to undertake. I firmly believe that the collection, as it exists, is bigger than the sum of the parts. So it's wonderful we have a library that fills 2,000 to 2,500 square feet of primary documents and other materials. It's wonderful to be able to take a primary document and find an artifact that goes with that document and that story and be able to make the story more real, more alive. But it's more important that all of that survive. So if we have to, we will start to segregate parts of the collection and perhaps look for other local homes. And worst case scenario, we have been in conversations with the state ed department who will assist with this. But if they become assistants in this, that doesn't guarantee that they can say it will stay here. They don't have space here in Rochester. So
before I get sort of all of our guests just thoughts on just how dire this is or how realistic they think a solution is, help us understand a little bit of where the funding typically comes from and what puts us in this situation. And then if there is one person in this community who can step forward and make a big change, what kind of, is this a situation where you go, Carolyn's going, do not ask me for a number, Evan, but I don't know. I don't know what you need. I don't know what your budget is. I don't know where your funding often comes from.
For many historical societies, their funding comes from the municipalities that they serve. Mm-hmm. And in some places, it's done by a room occupancy tax. Other areas in the state have a fee that supports cultural institutions. I know our city council has considered that from time to time, but Rochester is not one that, to my knowledge, does this yet. In some places, it's been in-kind donations. So a building has been gifted and then free from the constraints of rent, as long as the building isn't falling down, obviously, the society moves forward. We put together a strategic plan with a range of what we wanted. The most that we were going to ask for in perhaps combined funding for a year to continue operating and be able to hire a part-time executive director so we could expand our programming was $60,000 per year.
$60,000?
Yep. That's what we asked for that would cover the bulk, that would cover our rent and then give us enough to provide for part-time staff and a part-time executive director. That was a year and a half ago when we worked up a strategic plan.
How close are you or how far are you?
We're not close.
You're not close. Okay.
So, at all.
Okay. So, Tom, do you think that there's a realistic path forward for the society here?
The challenge here is, you have, we want to be in a desirable East Side, preferably location where people can bring families and feel safe and have the ability to come and see the wonderful artifacts that we have. But to oversimplify things, if you're in 6,000 square feet on the East Side and $12 a square foot space, that's a $6,000 a month rent. That's the challenge, and being able to cover the rent. Utilities could run $2 a square foot in addition to that. We're optimistic, and we're trying to turn over every stone we possibly can to look at options because of how important we feel it is to keep this these artifacts here in Rochester. But it's a challenge. It's oftentimes landlords are, in the business of making money, and we are trying desperately to find something that fits all those needs.
Okay. Richard, what do you think is realistic here? I mean, do you see a path that keeps this society operating as it sort of is now?
Well, I think a path that, gosh, I don't know, Carolyn, we've talked about a path. I am, how do I explain it nicely? I guess what I want, what I'd like to see is, like Tom said, find our way to a piece of property that would house us. Path forward is to get, of course, more donations and maybe some public
assistance.
Some public assistance. Right.
So some combination of contributions, private donations, public funding.
Yeah, if we can do it.
But it sounds like the clock is ticking, though, that if we're sitting here a year from now having this conversation, there is no society if things don't change. It sounds like. Is that right?
That's interesting, that because I was in conversations with the state on Wednesday, and they pretty much asked that question because we're chartered. And so we have to plan for what we do with that charter with state education. And I said, we have no plans to dissolve. What we will look like in a year, I'm hopeful, but what I hope we are in a year is much leaner. We need less space, and we can be in a place where we can aggressively program, if that was the best case scenario. no matter what, I'm not ready to, you know, see the ship go down. So I'm not going to say in a year we're not going to be here.
Okay. You want to add to that, Tom?
I certainly agree. We're not going to go down without a fight. We're all very passionate about it, and we're here to spread that message and search for other people that share our passion for Rochester history.
Well, as a talk show host and WXXI can't endorse charitable giving beyond us. If you want to be a member, you can always do that. But I do know there are some listeners who may be wondering very specifically, if I do want to help you, what do you need them to do? How do they get a hold of you? How do they do it?
They can either call the Society. We do have a website. And even though we don't have staff, one of our board members is in there every day, every Monday, and will return calls and talk with people about the kinds of assistance they can offer. And we do have one staff person for 10 hours a week who is there to meet with the public. You need to check on the schedule because he also has a few other places that he works, and so his schedule shifts a bit. But we can also provide access to the collections, and he's still providing research. So rochesterhistory.org.
Rochesterhistory.org. Listeners wondering, how about the new Landmark Society's new location? Can you guys join forces?
We have, over the past 5 years, met with every sister institution, and they have been wonderful. We actually have a space at Genesee Country Village and Museum where we have an exhibit currently, Yesterday's Child, where our paintings are on display. It's the second floor of the Livingston Backus House. But when you are looking at a collection the size of what we have, nobody has an extra 8,000 square feet hanging around. And it's difficult. It's a lot to ask of other institutions who themselves, the dollars in the arts and cultural nonprofit world are not large. And so we are very cognizant as we ask, and we try to move forward with some collaborations, and we will continue to have those conversations. But we're aware of their situations too. So
It's tight for everybody, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It really is.
Exactly. And so we hope for something like that. It would be wonderful if we could pull together a Western New York historical cultural center or something, you know, which would take the pressure off of all of the institutions here, because Rochester Museum and Science Center has a lot in storage as well. Some of our former items decades ago were loaned to them. Yeah.
Well, I have this image of people from the Landmark Society listening going, wait, do people think we have this lavish existence? I mean, I know it's tight for everybody, but I'm getting some emails with some other suggestions or questions. So again, listeners, if you want to get on their website, the Rochester Historical Society's website is what?
Rochesterhistory.org.
Okay, you can learn more, and if you want to contact them about either helping them out if you so choose or otherwise, there's a lot of information there. And if you want to share your thoughts, you can email the program. I've got a few emails to read in a moment. connections@wxxi.org. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. The Rochester Historical Society is in some trouble financially, and they're looking for a way forward that will allow them to sustain, maybe get leaner, as they said, but continue the mission to preserve the history, to educate the public. And in a moment, I'll ask all three board members who are here, you know, some of their favorite items or stories that come from a collection like this. But before we do that, I want to get a little macabre on you here, because I want to talk about why history matters. Here's a quote from this week from Conan O'Brien, of all people. He was doing an interview about how his career has changed. And, you know, the interviewer was saying, well, you know, fewer people see your work. And he said, actually, it doesn't matter. None of that matters to me. He said, because pretty soon no one's going to remember my name. And they said, what do you mean? And here's what Conan O'Brien said this week. He said, eventually all graves go unattended. And they said, what? He said, I'm sorry, Calvin Coolidge was a pretty popular president. I've been to his grave in Vermont. It has the presidential seal on it. No one was there. And by the way, I'm the only late night host that has been to Calvin Coolidge's grave. I think that's what separates me from the others. But really, I once had a great conversation with Albert Brooks. When I met him for the first time, I was kind of stammering. I said, "You make movies. They live on forever. I just do these late night shows and they get lost. They're never seen again, and who cares?" And he looked at me and said, "What are you talking about? None of it matters." "None of it matters?" I asked him. He said, "No, that's the secret. In 1940, people said Clark Gable was the face of the 20th century. Who thinks about Clark Gable anymore? None of it matters. You'll be forgotten. I'll be forgotten. We'll all be forgotten. All of our graves will go unattended." End quote. Conan O'Brien. And he told the interviewer, that was actually very freeing to him, because he stops feeling the weight of every mistake he makes in every moment, which is an interesting other philosophical discussion. I take the point. If you've been through, you know, the beautiful Mount Hope Cemetery, you go, "Oh my gosh, these people all had stories. I don't know any of their names." But at the same time, I don't want, there are certain things that I think should be preserved sort of in perpetuity, or as close to perpetuity as we can get. And I sort of think that's where you come in. How do you feel about it, Carolyn?
Well, obviously I'm wedded to history.
Yes.
So you've got, and I think I take his point when it comes to the individual. But history isn't always about the individual. Mm-hmm. And so the aggregate is what can be very important. And at times it is framed by an individual. Cool Cal, yeah, I guess a lot of people don't remember him. But some of us do.
Some of us still remember Clark Gable. And I don't say even remember, at least appreciate.
Exactly, exactly. So I think that history is important. And let me flip it a little bit and say, when one group, whether it's an armed group, a political group, seeks to control another, one of the first things they do is destroy their history. So in the Bosnian-Serbian War, they each made efforts to destroy each other's history, the records, the statues, the iconography, all of it, because that is, at the end of the day, how we perceive ourselves as people and a group and a community. And to me, that's one of the real important functions of society. And its importance to me is revealed in how many times it's attacked.
That is such an important and interesting historical point there. Literal physical attacking of history and erasing of history. Mm-hmm. As a means for political advantage. And I do think, Carolyn, there is a difference between saying, "Hey, most people won't know your name, you know, pretty soon after you're gone," and then saying there are movements, there are moments, there are people who worked for causes whose work and individual, whether it's individual or collective, ought to be remembered and needs to be remembered to help guide us, to help educate us. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's that tangible thing that really lights somebody's fire. So let me ask all of you, what's in the society that excites you? What excites you the most, Carolyn?
Oh, it's hard to pick.
We'll start with one, and then you'll think of something else, and we can continue. We've got time today, and this is what we're talking about. We're talking about our history.
I'm going to give you one story. It may not be singularly my favorite object, but it's Patrick O'Rourke. We have his uniform. We have other objects from him. Patrick O'Rourke was the son of Irish immigrants who came here from Montreal on their way here before the Civil War. He grew up in poverty here in Rochester, in the shadow of the Genesee, on the banks and in what were then tenements. He distinguished himself in school and came to the attention of local educators and a congressman. He was actually awarded a scholarship to the U of R, but at that point, the U of R had a Baptist affiliation, and his Irish Catholic mother didn't want him going there. So he went to work elsewhere. His father had already died in a railroad accident here in the city. He was appointed to West Point and distinguished himself. He was the only economically disadvantaged student, the only immigrant student, and he was older than the rest. He graduated first in his class, and by the way, Custer was last in that class. Fitting. He became part of the Army Corps of Engineers, went off to fight in the Civil War, came home briefly and married local girl, went back to the war, and by some historians' accounts, there are some debates about this, he saved Little Round Top in the Battle of Gettysburg. He was also killed in that battle. So we have several artifacts plus the story of Patrick O'Rourke. And the reason I picked that story was it resonates today with things we're talking about with war and immigration and education and the potential. And it also is a wonderful story about the Civil War.
Great story. Tom?
I could study Rochester images forever. I have a real passion for the Erie Canal, and of course, 490 was the Erie Canal, and subsequently became the subway, which is a fascinating thing. And to there's so many people that you come across that didn't even know that the Erie Canal took that route, or that we ever had a subway. The Rochester Historical Society has just under 15,000. Scanned images of historic buildings, people, just a wonderful array of collections, architectural drawings of important buildings within the city, and I could study that stuff for more time than I have, but a fascinating collection.
Okay, Rich.
Some of the things that are really impressive that we've got are like Susan B. Anthony's dress and Frederick Douglass's signature and a lock of his hair. But we've got so many original paintings and portraits from early 1800s and then of the Rochester founders. And these are fascinating to me to look at a painting that was painted in 1829 of one of the founders. It's still in existence. It's still there. I'd hate to see anything like that disappear. Mm-hmm. And I can look, like Tom says, I can look through that stuff all day and never get tired of it. Because that's global history. Like Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass changed the world. And to lose their artifacts to another part of the country or a collection somewhere else would break my heart.
And I have some people asking questions on what happens next here. So before I get Roberta's phone call, let me read an email from Mike, who says, "Evan, today my wife and I were discussing which organizations we'd like to donate to when we receive our tax refund soon. The timing of my wife and my conversation and this episode of Connections might be a good thing, but can you make a case for why we should consider donating to the Historical Society? I wonder, does the city or county fund any of the organization, and if not, why?" He might have missed some of that. We can answer that again. He says, "Have you considered merging with the Monroe County Library System, specifically the main downtown branches? And why is Rochester Historical Society hurting more financially than those of other neighboring cities?" Carolyn, I'll turn to you. Let's take it point by point. Does the city or county fund any of the organization?
No.
And he says, if not, why?
There's a long history here. I'll make it short, as short as I can. The old Exposition Park, which is now Edgerton Park, had a building. It was the Western House of Refuge. And at one point in that building, Rochester Historical Society began, and they had some artifacts. And rather quickly, the Rochester Museum emerged. And they had some books, and there was a public library installation. Those three institutions split, and at that time, two went off to be municipally funded. The museum and the library and the Historical Society remained privately funded. And that was the result of the split in the collections, that the collections that went to the museum, some of which were on loan from Rochester Historical Society, would be funded by public dollars. And Rochester Historical Society's collections would be funded by private dollars. And admittedly, the membership at that point was, going back to Rich's point, the pioneers. It was the elite in Rochester, and they were fully capable of funding a society that focused mostly on research and writing. As we became the city's attic, you know, where everybody brought stuff, that became less viable for us. But entrenched in the history here was that delineation. And to date, no argument has resonated to change that funding stream. And that is the difference, to my knowledge, and I say this because there may be a small historical society in the state I don't know of, but to my knowledge, we are the only one in the state that receives no public funding.
Okay. So there's one of the cases. And so then he's asking, have you considered merging with the Monroe County Library System, specifically the main downtown branches?
The library's mission and ours is not completely, yeah. So whereas our library holdings might work well there, they're not in the business of artifacts, nor do they have the room for them. They have a completely different mission, and they're fulfilling it very well, you know. But their mission is not to tell Rochester's history or Rochester's stories. Their mission is to provide materials to people and other kinds of research and reading and all of the great outreach programs they do. So it's not entirely a good fit, but certainly we would welcome working with them and have worked with them in the past.
You put a number of about 60,000 as sort of a goal for an annual operating budget.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
You know, if you take a look at the combined budgets of Monroe County and the city of Rochester, $60,000 is a partial sneeze. Now, I am not trying to minimize that number, because there's still a lot you could do with $60,000, and there's a lot of people in need in our community. There's a lot of causes in need. At the same time, has the board... Do you feel like you've got a clear picture for why the county and the city can't sort of join hands and say, all right, we are going to reach between the cushions of the couch and come up with 60K because the historical society matters? Do you feel like you have an answer for that? I mean,
I'm dumbfounded. I can't understand why they wouldn't just step up and help us. We all see projects in the city that are unnecessary and things like that. And Why couldn't they help us? I mean, I as we talked about, some of this stuff is globally important. 60 grand is just not a lot of money. It's a lot of money to me personally, but to the city or county.
No, I'm with you. I think when I heard 60,000 as sort of a goal for an annual operating budget, that's lower than I would have expected, considering what a lot of organizations work with. Tom, do you feel like you have an understanding for why?
The Buffalo and Erie County Historical Society in 2018 had an operating budget of $1.6
million. I'm sorry, what is it?
That's the Buffalo and Erie County Historical Society had
$1.6 million?
Wow, I didn't know that.
25% of which comes from government sources. So that's
like,
about
it's like 28 times your budget.
And if I could interject, the point here is that that budget, one quarter of it comes from public funding. So it's not the whole thing. But when you have a consistent stream of funding that you can plan on, first of all, you can go to funders and get grants more securely because they know you're secure. And you can also do your own fundraising because you can fundraise for an endowment for building, rather than constantly feeling, as we do, we're fundraising to get us through the next year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of the challenges is people have a tendency to want to latch their pony to successful things. And, you know, we're holding on here. And the more successful we get, I think the more people will be interested in adding to that.
Yeah, and that just is one of those cases where getting out of the starting blocks is the hard thing, because success begets success, donations beget donations, but you know, you need sort of a big chunk to get that moving. So that's where we are with the Rochester Historical Society. Roberta in Brighton has been waiting. Go ahead, Roberta.
Yeah, I came to Rochester over 30 years ago, and I came as a graduate student in art history in New York City, and so I did some research over at the Rochester Historical Society when it was located on East Avenue. And It was under the directorship, I believe, at that point, of a woman named Holohan. And she really treated the place as if it was a kind of secret society, a place where, you know, she let me in, but very tentatively. And I was amazed at what was available there, the paintings, the decor, the elegance of the place, but also it had sort of an air of kind of elegant, civilized decay. And again, she was extremely protective of what was there and was not at all engaging with the, you know, the notion of opening this up to the general public. And so it seems to me that that kind of attitude is something that really brought down the place, you know, over 30 years ago, because it just seemed as if very few people knew about what was there outside of, you know, local curators, who I think had similar sense of the kind of privacy and secrecy of the place, and it having been sort of held privately by this woman. Again, I don't mean to speak ill of her, but I don't know how a place like that can thrive if it's not available to the general public. At the same time, I know that the New York Historical Society in New York City has also at one point been in a state of near bankruptcy, and obviously New York City and Rochester are two different financial places. But I was really happy to see that it's now, you know, I was there just a few months ago, and you know, it's just really energized by what they're doing there. You know, wonderful restaurant, phenomenal exhibitions, lots of school kids going in and out, and lots of history to be learned about there. And, you know, I wish Rochester Historical Society the same success,
yeah.
But just the idea of a society is an antiquated one. And, you know, suggests a kind of privacy, a kind of exclusivity that that I don't think is good.
All right, Roberta, let me let our guests in the studio respond to some of that. Go ahead.
That certainly was the history. We know that was the history. And we've made great strides in changing that history. We no longer have Woodside. We sold that a while ago. We are now located on Lincoln Avenue, and hardly an elitist neighborhood. We have done a great deal of outreach. We have History on the Road, where our curator went to various places to present different programs based on our artifacts. So we made a decision that we would try and bring our history from the society out into the community. We actually do not consider ourselves to be in search of an exhibit space per se. We do not want to remain as just come and see us, although for some of our artifacts, that is the safest way for people to access them. But we have over 17 loans at this moment throughout the community in a variety of places. So we very much want to have our collections out and accessible to the general public. And the past is history, and her points are entirely valid about how it was done before. But in the past two decades, at least since I have known of the society, and since 2006 when I joined the board, we've made concerted efforts to be a very different society than that.
Okay. Tom, agree?
Yeah. It's unfortunate that Roberta had that experience, and I agree that probably was the case. But I can tell you that this board is a very down-to-earth, passionate group. We're a hardworking board. and we're all for the good of Rochester and for sharing the artifacts with the community. We have no, there's no blue bloods or martinis at noon going on with this board.
That's where your money went.
That's right.
Richard, you want to add to that?
I really can't. They said it all perfectly.
Yeah, and so let me go ahead and get our only break of the hour. I'm way late. It's one. Well, it's late. People are responding to what's going on with the Rochester Historical Society. I'm going to get some more of your emails and feedback that have come in with questions and comments about the state of the Rochester Historical Society and why others think this matter, what their experiences have been. So let's get that break, and we'll come back with board members of the Rochester Historical Society. Carolyn Vaca, Tom Latta, Richard Calabrese with us here in studio. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says we can fund green jobs by bringing the very, very top tax rates to 70%. It has historical roots in the country, and new polls show it's a popular idea. We discuss it Monday. Then in our second hour, a conversation about Rochester as a budding hotbed for lifestyle medicine. Talk with you Monday. Welcome back to Connections. Our guests from the Rochester Historical Society have told you this hour about the state of things and what they're hoping to do to help fill some of the void to raise money for a $60,000 annual budget when, as Board Member Tom Latta points out, Buffalo and Erie County next door are operating at about $1.6 million at an annual level. So they think it's a rather small ask, but without it, we'll ask this question in a moment, what happens if you really can't get there? Where does that painting from so many decades and decades ago go? Where does a lock of hair from Frederick Douglass go? Where does the Fox Sisters table go? There's a lot that we're going to work through there. But in terms of getting in touch with them, a lot of our listeners have been asking. So we mentioned the website, which is Rock History.
Rochesterhistory.org.
There's a Facebook page as well. Richard, you were mentioning that during the break as well.
Right.
A good place to get sort of just feedback and conversation there.
Absolutely.
Okay. And other events, what do you guys do at Knox?
We every few months, we have a history happy hour on a Friday night at Knox. We bring some artifacts. Thus far, I've been the one presenting the programs, and we tackle some interesting topics. We've talked about some of the standards, like the Erie Canal, but in the fall, I talked about the Fox Sisters and brought the wrapping table, spiritualism. We did Rochester Retail recently, and we've had some suggestions for an upcoming spring program. And Aaron and Kelly always match the wine, the beer, and the food to the topic.
Are you here to tell me that the Fox Sisters were not communicating with the dead?
No, I'm not going to tell you that.
Don't ruin this for me.
No, I wouldn't dare.
It's amazing, the history of spiritualism, and then when you find out these local connections. That's one of the joys of historical learning here. Let me get some more of your feedback. Scott writes to us and says, Scott's a local broadcaster. He says, I've been speaking with folks at WXXI, thinking about putting together a history-based podcast or web show, or maybe even a radio show, because history matters. Amen, Scott. Mike says, as the president of a very small town historical society, this is an ongoing crisis. We are all volunteer and survive on less than $3,000 a year. There's no one coming on board to help or become members. You do wonder what will happen as more and more historical societies fail. Well, I know Carolyn said earlier, you don't really want to entertain that possibility. You want to think of Rochester Historical Society as getting leaner but finding a way forward. But let's just take the worst case. And even if it's not in the next year, let's say it's in 2 or 3 years and you just cannot go forward. What becomes of the collection? Where do these items go? I imagine in some cases there are pretty easy answers. In some cases, you might not have any idea right now. So what's the process look like?
So an easy answer would be our Susan B. Anthony items that we hold. Obviously, our sister organization in the city would be a great home for that. But the paintings that Richard mentioned, they were done by a group of painters, itinerant painters, who traveled the country. One was named Gilbert. And my point with that is that those are very interesting paintings because of the way they were done, who did them, the entire nature of them. but they're not going to be interesting even at auction. Should, you know, the state say, okay, deaccession, and oh, by the way, this should probably go to auction. And to explain, if any of our items went to auction, the money from that auction would have to be used to the benefit of the remaining collections. The money doesn't go to any organization, any state group, or anything else. So, worst case scenario, if we had to auction those paintings, they probably wouldn't generate that much interest. But, and then what happens to them? You know, because they are not your typical work of art. So our paintings of the childhood that we have out at Genesee Country Village are fabulous works of art. But these were things that were done because people didn't always have a portrait taken. You know, photography hadn't emerged. And so these are itinerant painters who have a story, but they're not going to generate that kind of interest. So that's a whole group of items. And by the way, we hold over 930 paintings in our collection. It's an enormous amount that's greatly at risk. We have 44 boxes of wedding dresses that cover the practice of getting married throughout two centuries. You know, I don't, maybe Genesee Country Village, but these are all things that have to be, that's why, by the way, we suspended when we did, because it will take a lot of time. Even as we plan to be here, we do have to think about this, Evan, and I'm not blind to it. So we are beginning conversations about the what if.
No, I'm grateful for that, because if you literally got to a point where, well, this is it, this is the last day, I can't imagine the many, many hours, hundreds of hours of work to figure out homes for things that need homes and all of the work that is going to go into that. And frankly, the people who are going to have to be doing that work. So I, in one sense, it's heartening to hear that you're getting ahead of that. In another sense, it's sort of apocalyptic. So
yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that. So let me go ahead and read some more feedback. Matthew writes and says, I would pay admission to learn about Rochester history in a museum setting. Why doesn't this opportunity exist? Again, the short answer is funding. I mean, what would you say to that, Carolyn?
We've had museum-like spaces before when we were in the Rochester Public Library. We had an exhibit space. And the reality was that museum admission is wonderful, but there is not a museum in existence that survives on museum admission. It definitely can help, but you cannot charge enough in admissions to offset the cost. So even though we have programs that we run at Lincoln Avenue and invite people in, we've done that mostly at no charge to generate public interest. We have felt that it was more important to try and get people into the facility and see things to hopefully have them maybe speak to the support of the society.
Okay. Michael on Twitter says, what types of things are you doing now then for fundraising? A lot of smiles around the table.
Yeah. Right now, our energies are focused on, since December, on dealing with the immediacy. Prior to that, I wrote a number of grants. And I will say that the Community Foundation and Farish have been generous to us in the past and funded specific projects. Our History on the Road program, we charge for, and that actually has been a revenue generator. But we don't charge enormous amounts. So again, we're still not looking at huge amounts. Only recently have we instituted a policy of charging for our loans, and those are the loans going forward. So we've had a few. We had two loans to Jiva Theater in this past year, supporting their programming, and one of them we collected fees on. So in terms of would we love to do a big fundraiser? Yeah, we would love to. But you need space and people. So if people would like to volunteer for that, that would be wonderful to hear from them, because we've had a lot of ideas. We would love to encourage corporate sponsorship and look at, we've actually considered coming up with some kind of corporate membership package for those corporations who might be bringing in people from other communities to do a kind of orientation package for them.
Did I see some of your items at Thurgood, the show at Jiva?
Yes.
I did?
Yes.
Okay. There were some really neat displays that they had in conjunction with that show.
Yes.
As an example. So, okay, I'm not surprised to hear that you were involved with
and
that.
And the That's agitators.
Great. Okay.
We had a lot in the front at the agitators.
So in our last few minutes here, you know, there's so many people who are kind of commiserating. I'm here. Here's Bill who emails, I belong to a Monroe County Suburban Historical Society. Not only does the town not financially support the Historical Society, they charge a permit fee when the society holds an outside fundraiser. So there's this notion that, you know, we're not appreciating or, you know, taking care of our history enough. And I would like all of our guests to kind of offer us their concerns about what the cost is of that. If we are willing to let historical societies die or go away, lose items, figure out what to do with them, disperse them in various places, Richard, what's the cost in our society of that kind of thing?
If we lose our items, it's permanent. It's permanent. It's unfortunate. How do we get it back? You know, does it end up in a private collection? That it's a loss that you can't recover. You can't recoup.
Tom, what's the cost?
Irreplaceable items that you know, are just such a big part of this community, lost and a real tragedy. Can't even surmise it in words. It's a tough one.
Carolyn?
Give one quick example. We didn't treasure all that was Frederick Douglass, and now his home, the place that people connect with him out in the larger world, is Anacostia, where his national park site is. That's an example of the cost of not taking care of the items that tell your history.
Boy, that is such an interesting point, because, you know, certainly with last year's, the many works and programs and articles that were written commemorating Frederick Douglass in a couple hundred years, there's so many questions about why isn't Rochester the city, you know, that everyone in the country immediately thinks, oh, Rochester, Frederick Douglass and Susan B. And we do, but I'm not even sure all of Greater Rochester does enough, let alone a national stamp on it. Mm-hmm. Have we missed an opportunity? Is it too late for that? Is this part of sort of preserving? Is there a way to sort of rebuild and work toward that creation of that identity?
I think there's always an opportunity. And we definitely have artifacts here still. We definitely have landmarks and stories. And we need to make a concerted effort to bring all of it here. And we also have in our holdings artifacts and letters and diaries of the people who walked the streets with them. What a great story that is. Yeah. The world that was theirs.
Tom, do you think when you travel and you meet people in other cities, they think of Rochester as a Susan B. Frederick Douglass city?
I think more Susan B. Anthony than Frederick Douglass, although the city is certainly making some good moves in getting those statues out, and there's some momentum going in recreating that. But like Carolyn said, many years were lost, and you can't get it back.
Yeah. What do you think, Rich? When you travel, do you think people have an identity in mind for Rochester that kind of fits where you'd like it to be?
Generally, I don't think so. When I travel, I like to go to the historical cities and learn about them and wander and go to the museums. When I was in Washington, D.C. a couple months back, I think, and not even a couple months back, a month and a half ago, I took a tour of the nation's capital. And they had a statue of Frederick Douglass right in the center of the entrance. It was fantastic. Did anyone really know who he was? I don't know. I mean, they might have. I don't think people really think about Rochester, New York as Frederick Douglass and Susan B. Anthony. They even Kodak, Xerox, Bausch & Lomb, things like that. I don't think people understand it.
Well, Raymond writes to us and says, Parcel 5 is still open. Put the Historical Society there and turn it into a monument to Susan B. and Frederick Douglass. All right, a minute left here, Carolyn. What do you think? Parcel 5?
We'll go for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's great.
I mean, like, we're kind of laughing, but in a sense, it's not crazy.
No.
It's not a crazy idea at all to stake these important figures in our history in a really meaningful way. So, Raymond, thanks for the email. I don't know that there's a working active proposal for that, but it doesn't strike me as off the rails. So as we get ready to wrap here, Carolyn, what do you want to leave the audience with? I mean, we've been talking about the possible end or winding down or serious consequences for the Rochester Historical Society, which is facing real funding problems. You've already, you know, had to make significant changes and scale back in different ways. What do you want to leave the listeners with?
We believe that this history is critical and so important to our identity as Rochesterians, as residents of Monroe County. But that's not enough. We need to know that the county also believes that. So please let us know any way you can.
The website one more time?
RochesterHistory.org.
Well, I say this just as an observer. Good luck to you. Thank you for taking the time for telling the story and preserving the history. And we will see what happens to the Historical Society. Carolyn Vaca, President of the Board, thank you. Thanks for taking
thank
the time.
Thank you so much.
Tom Latta and Richard Calabrese, thanks for taking the time as well.
My pleasure. Seven.
All right, John Andrus is the engineer today. Thank you, John. And Megan Mack, the producer of Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice weekend. And we will dig out and talk to you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.